I think the world looks at things like that a lot of times, at least individuals that are like that, they would say, why'd you do this to me, God? Where are you? And we live in a world, I was driving to church today and I thought that question. I'm thinking, $4 a gallon, really? Where's the justice in this world? I mean, we're Americans. We got more oil than OPEC. It ought to be free. It's ours. We stole it from somebody once. We live in a world where people go, God, where's the justice? And it's not just the atheists. I got into an interesting debate this week with a few people. I got onto somebody's blog and I made a comment, and the next thing I knew, I was the only Christian on there. Well, there's no God. I mean, look at the world. Look at what goes on in the world. Look at the wars. Look at all the garbage and the things going. How can there be a God? Where is God? I find it interesting that atheists, the first thing they say is, looking around, it's obvious there's no God. Otherwise, he'd do something about it. And yet, if you look around at all the good things, I could say, well, there is a God. It's interesting, but it's not the atheist that, I mean, they're fun to talk to. I used to be one. And you can get in some great conversations. It's the Christians that are the hard ones to talk to. Because you talk to the Christians, and it goes like this. Well, I thought when I gave my life to God or believed in God that things were supposed to be a little bit different. Where's the justice? I thought things were supposed to be just. It's like the little 8-year-old boy. He looked at his dad and he says, hey, I'm going out back playing. And he ran out back and they had this little mountainside with all these rocks. And he started climbing. His dad went out and said, no. Son, don't climb up those. You're going to get hurt. Turns around a few minutes later, his son's climbing up again. Goes out the next day and there's his son doing what an 8-year-old does. He's climbing. And then he hears it one day, this loud scream. And he runs in the backyard and there's his son. Had climbed up again. That little 8-year-old had climbed way up and had fallen. And when he landed, it knocked the wind out of him, and it took him a while before he could even let a scream out. He was still trying to catch his breath, and he's laying there. He had broken both arms, and he's laying there in extreme pain. And he looks up at his dad, and while he's trying to catch a breath in all of this pain, he says, it's your fault. You didn't stop me. You didn't catch me. You let me fall. And it's just like that in our world today. But it's not the atheist. I mean, they have their beef. But you meet Christians all the time. When things don't go our way, it's your fault. And Habakkuk does this. He gets up in verse 2. And look what he says. In verse 2, he just screams out. And he says in verse 2, how long, O Lord, must I call for help and you don't hear me? How long can I call for help? I think we'll bring that up. And you don't hear me. There it is. Woe to the... Oh, that's not it. But we'll get there. We'll bring it right back to you in just a minute. And so he's calling out. Nope, we're going to go back to Habakkuk. There we go. How long must I call for help, but you do not listen or cry out? Violence. And you don't save me. We live in a world where I have, and you probably have been crying out to say, look, in America we've had since Roe versus Wade 40 million babies that have died in the safest place, I think, on planet Earth, in a mother's stomach. And I don't care what your feelings are on this. We've had 40 million babies executed. And I know there's different passionate things. Habakkuk says, where's the justice in that? We have 12 to 30 million children today, between 12 and 30 million that are sold in slavery and trafficked. Where's the justice? God, where are you? And as Christians, we're praying out. We have politicians who sometimes get a little bit greedy and they pass laws that we don't agree with. And all of a sudden, we're saying, God, where's the justice? And just like Habakkuk, we say, how long do I have to keep crying and crying? And I say, violence, and there's no answer. I love what happened during 9/11, which is hard to believe that it was over 10 years ago. But on the TV, do you remember an interview on major network? I remember this. I remember her sitting down and I was glued to the TV when a major company asked Billy Graham's daughter, where was God and why did God let this happen for 9/11? You're a Christian. Why don't you explain to the world? And I thought, wow, talking about putting Christianity on the spot. As if somehow God needs defending. Trust me, God doesn't need me to defend God. And I couldn't even come close. But here's the question. Where was God in all of this? Does God not care? In other words, look, there's no God. And here's what her answer was. I love this. Ruth Graham Lotz said this, quote, she said, I believe that God is deeply saddened by all of this, just as we all are. But for many years, we've been telling God to get out of our schools, to get out of our government, and to get out of our lives. And being the gentleman that he is, I believe that he is calmly backed out. How can we expect God to give us his blessing and his protection if we demand that he leaves us alone? That's a smart lady. I can't have it both ways. I can't ask God for justice, but then tell God most of the time, just leave me alone. See, we all want justice. I want justice for other people. I don't want justice for myself. You want justice? God can give you justice. Think about that. Do you really want God to be just with you? Would you really want God to give you what you deserve? See, I want God to give other people what they deserve. I want him to go get those politicians. I want him to go get those criminals. I want him to go get those kidnappers. I want him to get those people in those industries. I want God to go get those terrorists. But I don't want God to give me what I deserve as if somehow I'm better. See, I don't want God's justice. I want God's mercy. Mercy is greater than sacrifice. And to heed God's instruction is better than the fat of rams, David says to us. I would rather have the mercy of God than the justice of God in my life any day. Do we want justice? Absolutely we want justice. But we live in a world where Isaiah, now we can bring that up, in Isaiah, he reminds us of what's happening in our world today. He said, woe to those who call evil good, wow, and good evil, who put darkness, now wait a minute, he said this about 2,600 years ago, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet, and sweet for bitter. No wonder why we're crying out for justice. We live in a world that seems like everything I believe is the opposite of what's happening in our country. I don't know if anybody can relate to this. I mean, I can't turn on the news and I'm thinking, really, is this happening? And Habakkuk goes, I'm crying out to you, God. I'm crying out. And I don't want to get too political. But I turned on the news the other day, and there's a lady who's standing before Congress asking you and I to pay taxes so that she, as an attorney at Georgetown, can have all the social life that she wants to have. And if she does it 10 times a day, she can't afford it because it's $3,000 a year. And as a college student, she thinks we ought to have in the healthcare every kind of contraceptive. And then if it doesn't work in the contraceptive, that we pay for the abortions afterwards. I don't want any responsibility, and I certainly don't want any consequence. You pay for it. And honestly, I'm going, when evil is good and good is evil, because someone spoke out against it and they were told to give them the girl an apology. The debate is not about what she's asking for as much as what's happening in our country. That the idea that maybe you ought to wait for marriage and then you don't have to worry about all of these bills and health things. You don't have to worry about STDs and all the other things. If you waited for marriage, maybe somewhere in there, God actually has a plan that says you don't ever have to worry about an STD. You don't ever have to worry about all these other things because I'll work this out in your marriage. We live in a country where I saying don't have sex before marriage is actually a strange thing. I remember A.C. Green from the Los Angeles Lakers was on Jay Leno years ago. It was Jay Leno at the time. And they said, we hear that you are a Christian and that as an NBA champion, multimillionaire, women throwing themselves at you, that you're saving yourself for marriage. He says, yeah, that's actually true. And the entire audience laughed at him. And they began making jokes about how ridiculous he was. And I remember watching that thinking, that's the way the world is going. And it's such a strange concept to say that I would save myself. Habakkuk says, where's the justice in all of this? And the world Forget about the world. The church is having a hard time itself deciphering between right and wrong. And Habakkuk cries out and says, Lord, how long do I have to keep crying? I'm crying. Well, then he started complaining and complaining. See, there's a difference between crying out to God and complaining to God. And if you're crying out to God, God's going to hear you, because we need to be involved in these things. But God gives us an answer, because everyone loves short-term solutions. And here's what he says. There's three chapters, and there's three things here about not getting caught up into. The first one is this. Don't buy short-term. Don't buy into it. Everybody wants shortcuts. God, answer me now. Where is my justice? I want it now. If God brought justice now, and by the way, the scripture says, God is patient, not wanting any one of you to perish. Do you know that's what the scripture says? Do you know the verse before that says, the reason the Lord hasn't come back today is because some people aren't saved. God says, if I come back today and I merit my justice, listen, are you walking with God? Can you stand before the holy throne of God in that altar and face Jesus face to face and say, yep, I'm going into heaven, and I've done everything he wanted me to do, and I'm going to walk in with a clear conscience, and I'm bringing my whole family with me. And God says in the New Testament, God is patient with you. But everybody wants it right now. We want everything. I stand in front of my microwave oven, heating things up. That's how I cook my meal. I mean, some people used to use stoves. You know, you have to preheat. I know my wife still does. That's how she cooks. That's not fast enough for me. I'll stand at the microwave. I don't know if this is you, any of you guys, but I'll stand at the microwave oven going, really? 1 minute? I mean, there was a time you had to go get the wood, cut it up, and put it and get it started. Then run out with a gun and shoot something and skin it. There was a time. No way. Fast food isn't fast enough. Now they have clocks at fast food restaurants, 30 seconds or less, because 31 wasn't fast enough for you people. So now they're going, we'll get you in here and out of here. What kind of food are you getting in 30 seconds? Faster, faster. And then we want to lose weight, but we don't want to go to the gym, because now they have pills you can take and lose weight while you sleep. Now that's a reality check. Or you put on this, I don't know what, an ab Pfizer or ab something. You put this on and it goes, bzzz, and you're losing weight. And then they'll show this guy that looks not like me. And they'll go, you know, he's like, I've been using this for a week, and I look like this. I'm like, you have not been, you did not lose your weight. But we have all these fast, right now. And we have all these shortcuts. We have shortcuts in finances. We have shortcuts in weight. We have shortcuts in our relationships. And we don't want to wait. And here it is. In church, we want the shortcut. God heal me now. God bless me now. God move in my life today. And if you don't, where are you? And God says, don't sell out to the short term. That's not a good investment. I'm in this for the long run. I signed up with God for eternity, not for 5 minutes. And God says, I got you. Trust me. And Habakkuk's crying out to God. He says, you sure you got me? He says, I have got this from beginning to end. You need to trust me. And you go, are you kidding me? Look at my life. It's a mess. I got no arms and no legs. No, he's blessing God. That man is speaking in places I'll never get through doors. Thank God he has no arms and no legs. That's what he says. And I'm thinking to myself, nope, I don't think I can handle that. God says, I know you can't handle it. That's why I want to give you some assurances. And Habakkuk gets these assurances. Look at verse 12. He says, oh, Lord, are you not everlasting? He had to go back and start reminding himself. See, when gas goes to $4, and wait, folks, wait till it hits $8. You think people are complaining now. Where's the justice? We'll all be driving our cars. No, we'll be riding our horses, our bicycles. Milk will be, you know, $10 an ounce. Bread. Could it happen? Well, anything can happen, but what are you going to do? You're going to look at the circumstance, and you're going to complain, and you're going to cry, where's the justice in this? And God says, well, I've got this. And you got to remind yourself of who your God is. If you're going to, as a Christian, call out to God, make sure you're crying out, but remember who God is. Habakkuk says, in verse 12 says, oh, are you not eternal? You're everlasting. I love this. He says, oh, Lord, you have appointed them to execute judgment. Oh, rock. And he remembers, he goes, oh, that's right. God, you're a rock. I mean, the armies, he's praying. They just had the Assyrians wipe out the entire northern kingdom, two tribes of Israel, not hardly 80 years beforehand. The Assyrians, King Xerxes, you saw maybe or heard of the movie 300, they come through and wipe out the northern kingdom. They're in the southern kingdom. He says, I'm going to do a work that you're not even going to believe it, even if you saw it. And he raised up the Babylonians, modern-day Baghdad, Iraq. They go up, conquer the Assyrians, and they come in. Here he's saying, deliver us from some of these enemies. And he says, I got you. I'm going to raise up another king, and I'm going to wipe you guys out. Not exactly the prayer I was thinking. God answered prayer, yeah. He brought in more destruction. God brought in the enemies. God brought in King Nebuchadnezzar. God brought in destruction. That'll mess with some people's faith. But God did this. Why did God do this? Because you want to sit around and complain to God. God says, I've got this. Stop your complaining. But we got to remember who God is, because in chapter 2, here's what we do. The reminder to me is, I'm not going to sell short. I am not selling God short. God's got this. I remember Pastor Steve, I worked for him for 9 years. He's a little Hebrew guy. You might have met him. He comes here about every Thanksgiving. He's my crazy uncle from out of town. He went to Israel one time, and while he was there, he's not in the typical mode of most pastors. Instead of going with the tour guide, he decided to go over with these other guys. And he met these two guys, these cousins. He says, hey, will you guys take me on a tour? Now I get to really see the city. And they said, sure, we'll take you on a tour. And he pays them, and they said, hey, before we go, though, we need to stop by my uncle's. He needs some help. So they go over there to the uncle's, and they go into one of these just like you think of an Israel house, just going into this kind of adobe kind of thing. And up on four wooden sticks is this little frame, and up above, he's got this giant rug he's making, this tapestry, this incredible weaving. And he's going up, and he's sticking a needle up through the top, and he's doing this, and it's hooking, and then he pulls it down. And he's doing, and all there are is these knots and these strings hanging everywhere. There's no tapestry. And they go, we'll come back in a few hours and help him lower it down. And he didn't understand at the time, but he's looking at this thing going, how in the world? And he says, look at his feet. And he looked down at his feet, and he's got this old paper that's been handed down to him from family member to family member to family member, and it's got this pattern. And he's just looking at it, and he's going up, and that's what he's doing. He's just watching the pattern. He has no idea what's happening on top. He's just watching the pattern down below. They come back a few hours later to help because this thing weighs a couple hundred pounds. And they go and they help him lower this down. As they lower it down, it's one of the most beautiful tapestries you've ever seen. I mean, the colors and the picture were just incredible. He goes, that's amazing. He never saw it. He just simply worked from the paper. And in our lives, we may never see it. We simply work from the paper. Oh, it looks like strings and knots. Everything looks like a mess in my life. And you've got to do like Habakkuk says, but you are my rock. You are eternal. You know what's going on. And knowing one day when it's all lowered down, you're going to look and go, now that made sense. I don't understand it now, but that makes sense. Because God always knows what he's doing. And if you want to take his job, good luck. I saw Bruce Almighty with Jim Carrey, and he was trying to answer prayers, and he just hit yes to everything because you couldn't handle the hundreds of millions of prayers coming in every day and to have the wisdom to decipher every single one. But God has that. And in number two, in chapter two, it says this. It's a great scripture. It says, God has his justice. There are so many times people say, and you know, they use the pastor as the sounding board. Hey, pastor, what do you think of this? People come to me and go, what do you think about prayer in school? We need to get prayer in school. I go, good, go get prayer in school. I think prayer's in school. What do you mean? Anybody in school can pray anytime they want. And they go, what? I go, they just can't do this organized thing led by the school, blah, blah. Well, we ought to make that happen. I said, well, go ahead and do it. Well, we ought to get politicians, and we ought to do this for political reasons. What do you think about Rush Limbaugh? What do you think about Levine? What do you think about this guy? What do you think about Hannity? What do you think about this? I think, well, they do what they do, and I do what I do. That's what I think. Well, you ought to say something to the congregation. Okay, I just did. Well, you're not political enough. And what do you think about Wall Street? What do you think about these people sitting in there and doing this Wall Street occupation thing? I'm not going to tell you. because I have my opinions. And you, well, you ought to tell them. And you ought to make people think what you think. No, I don't want to do that. I want to make people think what Jesus thinks. That's what I want to do. You see, I can make you think what I think, but that would just assume that somehow I have all the answers and I've got it all figured out. And folks, trust me, on a grading curve to God, I am a flunky. I don't even register on the radar. Einstein said we use 8% of our brain. That gives me a minus 92 on every score. They would lock me in a rubber room, and they would, but instead you made me your pastor, and you come hear me every week. So you tell me who's really in trouble. Yeah, who's really in charge of the nut house? Oh, you said nut house. You're not supposed to use that term. When it comes to me, it's okay. What do we do about this? Well, Habakkuk gives us all the answers. He tells us, I got you. God says, I have got your back. Here it is. He says, by the way, all the security cameras are recording everything. You want justice? Trust me. One day it will be swift and I've got everything. And that's a scary day. I don't look forward to that day. I don't want to see that day. I don't want to be around because there's friends of mine who reject it. I don't want to be around because there are nations who reject it. There might even be family members who reject it. I don't want to see the justice of God. I want to see the mercy of God. But he gives five woes. Let me show these to you. These are powerful things. You say, God doesn't know anything about our education, our government. 2,600 years ago, he talked about the United States of America in 2012. And here it is. In chapter 2, verse 6, he says, woe to him who piles up stolen goods and makes himself wealthy by extortion. Gee, I don't know anyone in financial markets that are piling up stolen goods and making themselves wealthy by extortion, Enron. I don't know anybody who's doing this anywhere, Fannie Mae. I don't know anywhere that this, Freddie Mac. I don't know any financial institution, Wall Street, anybody who's piling up financial gains in our day. Habakkuk, you don't know a thing about modern times. So he's got the financial thing nailed. So don't worry, God is going to take care of it. Chapter 2, verse 9. Go down to verse 9. Here's the next one. Woe to him. Woe to him who builds his realm by unjust gain to set his nest on high to escape the clutches of ruin. You have plotted the ruin of many people, shaming your own house and forfeiting your life. The stones of your wall will cry out. If you look at this, it can be translated in your education, what's being taught in your classrooms. He's saying, woe to you who are teaching false things in the classroom. Like somehow we came from monkeys. Now, if you want to have a monkey for an uncle, that's up to your family reunions. But my Bible tells me in Genesis chapter 1 that, and God made them according to their own kind. And science actually teaches the opposite of you evolving in a microevolution happens all the time. That's why I own a Labrador and some of you own a moppy dog. Because they're still dogs. And so he says, I've got this. You want to teach this? He says, we ought to get Christianity into education. We ought to get Christianity in the church first. If we can get the church to rise up and believe the right things, then we're going to do a whole lot better because the church is arguing over what they believe about education. And then in verse 12, woe to him who builds city with bloodshed and establishes a town with crime. I just thought Detroit. That's all I can think of. Woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed and establishes a town by crime. This is all political corruption. You don't think God knows there's political corruption? He says, I got you. I've got it all figured out. And then he says the fourth one, verse 15. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbor, pouring it from the wineskin till they are drunk so they can gaze on their naked bodies. And all I could think of on that was our sexual industry. How many times we can't make it illegal? 80% of girls on college campuses interviewed that had lost their virginity or had had sex in the last year said, 80% of them said they had been date raped and alcohol was in play almost every single time. I don't think anybody's using alcohol to take advantage of people or drugs, and yet up to 30 million people are kidnapped every year, put on drugs, and then sold on the streets in nations, including our own. And he says, you want justice? Listen, I know it's going on. I've got this. The cameras are rolling. People are going to pay for this. I don't want justice. I want mercy. I mean, I'll let you take care of justice. I'll get to that in just a second. And the last one is found in verse 19. He says, woe to him who says to wood, I love this, who says to wood, come to life, or to a lifeless stone, wake up. He's talking about religion. He says, you don't think there's justice? The church is taking the Bible and throwing it right out the window. The church is taking marriage and throwing it right out the window. The church is taking Jesus Christ, saying you can believe in Jesus, you can believe in Eckankar, you can believe in a rock or a stone. As long as you believe, we're all going to heaven. And he says, no, 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 you want justice because you're tired of the church being corrupt? I got that too. And he lays that out over and over. Should we be involved in these things? Absolutely. I think every one of us ought to be passionate about every single one of these things. You ought to be political. You ought to be educational. You ought to be involved in the sexual revolution, the new sexual revolution that says wait for marriage. You ought to be involved in all of these things, passionately praying to make a difference. But the idea that you're crying out to God, where are you? You're not. He says this in verse 20, and you will not like this translation, trust me. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Now you like that. What he's saying is the Lord says, I'm in my whole, I got this. I'm right where I need to be. I'm in charge. Oh, I don't know if I can handle that. You know what? If you're in charge, then why don't you do something about this? If you're in charge, why don't you change this? If you're in charge, why did that boy walk into that school in Ohio and shoot those kids? If you're in charge, and then he says this, I am in charge. Look at the next verse. You won't like this. I'll read it to you in the NIV, and then I'll read it to you in the Hebrew. It says, but the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. English, Hebrew. The Lord is in the place he needs to be, so shut up. That's not a word we like to use in our home. That's not a good word. In other words, he says, look, I've got this, so why don't you guys just be quiet? Not be quiet that you're not passionate. Be quiet that you just sit around and complain all the time like you don't have a God. You walk around just like everyone else, that you don't have a God, that you don't trust that God has your back. He's got your front, he's got your side, he's got your lower, he's got your upper, he's got it all. My God is the God of this universe, and at any moment, he's going to merit out his justice. And I pray on that day that every man and woman who says in Philippians, where the Bible says, on that day, every knee shall bow and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. When the sky parts and from the east to the west, as lightning strikes from the sky, so the Son of Man will appear in all of his glory, and written on the robe of his train will say, King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and riding on him will be riding on a white horse, and with him will be other riders, and there will be death, and there will be justice, and there will be mercy, and all of these things riding with him, and the host of heaven coming along, and the whole earth will look and go, oh, this is the day. I'm not going to look at that day and go, good. Justice finally arrives. On that day, I say, God, give us mercy. God, grant me mercy on that day. Because mercy is greater than sacrifice. And to he, better than the fat of rams. That's what King David told us. And I want to cry out on that day and say, God, give me mercy. Don't give me justice. And so I thank God. I know every camera, every security camera is recording everything. And let me close it this way. The last thing, and there's just two verses in chapter 3, he closes and he says this. We need to invest with our hearts. Stay in this thing for the long term. Don't sell short. And then he says, look at verse 16. Habakkuk finally prays and he says, I heard and my heart pounded and my lips quivered. Isn't that great? I heard and my heart pounded and my lips quivered. And you know what happens when this takes place? Look at verse 19. And the sovereign Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer. He enables me to go to the heights. I heard God and my heart pounded. When I was born with a heartbeat. It was my heartbeat. It beat just the way it beat every day. My heart beats. God's heart beats. And God is saying to Habakkuk, invest with your heart. Get my heart beat. Let our hearts beat as one. If you get your heart beating with God's heart, to feel what God feels, to weep when God weeps, and to laugh when God laughs. See, we always talk about weeping. It's okay to weep. Jesus wept for the nations when he saw them. Jesus wept for Lazarus when he died. It's okay to weep. It's okay to cry out to God on behalf of the unborn children. It's okay to cry out to God on behalf of our political leaders. It's okay to cry out to God for our finances. It is okay. But what's not okay is to run our own heartbeat and complain to God when things don't go our way. He says, things will go as they go, but would you just get your heartbeat and my heartbeat? It's interesting. Jesus says, I and the Father are one. And if you're in me, you and the Father are one. John chapter 14. Jesus said, get your heart. I mean, my watch is never right. My watch is never the same as that clock, and that clock is never the same as my car clock because I always set them faster. So I'm not late. And then I'm always late because I know I have extra time. It's called self-deception. It's the worst kind of deception. As if I'm teaching myself something good here. I am my Father's son, always fashionably late. And the other thing about my clock is it always misses time. It doesn't stay perfect. It's a $20 watch I've had for about 12 years. I just keep changing the bands when I break them and the battery when it dies. I love this watch, but it's never right. But I love it. Because it kind of gets me close. And God says, I don't want to get you kind of close. If you could sync with me, we could be so close. And how do I sync with God? And I ask that question, how do I sync my heart with God? Do you know that God gives us examples in life for everything? In Israel, at one of their top universities, do you know what they just discovered? They've known this about animals. I've got it right here. I've got the names. I've got the study and everything. Here's what they found. They took a mother and they took these infants, these three-month-old infants, and they hooked them up to check their cardio. And here's what they found. They've been doing this study with animals where an animal will bond with its cub or something, the mother and the cub, but only when they physically touch. What they found is humans are different. They have something very unique in the cardio system that they started measuring these babies' heartbeats. And the mother's heartbeats. And here's what they found. With animals, when they touch, their heartbeats will sync. Here's what they just discovered. With humans, it's different. They found with babies, if the mother began talking audio to her child and looking and getting the child to make face contact, that their hearts would sync perfectly. No matter where that child's heart was, that child's heart changed to be exactly the mother's heartbeat. I think God shows us Romans chapter 1, verse 22, and we men are without excuse because God has shown his great and awesome power by what has been made so that men are without excuse. And you look at this study, and I thought, God, that's what I want. Through the audio and visual, my heart, every morning when I wake up, my heart, I don't know about you, but some days my heart's just doing its own thing. And I look and I go, God, is my heart with your heart? And so I wake up in the morning and I get that FaceTime with God. And the closer I get and to hear his voice, what begins to happen is what begins to happen is God doesn't change. But what begins to happen is my heart and his heart begin to beat. That my heart sinks with God's. And the things that break his heart break my heart. And the things that make him laugh make me laugh. And the joy that he has is now my joy. And so what do? I walk with him. And instead of having two heartbeats, it's louder. Because it's my heart and his heart. And the God of the universe's heart's beating within me in harmony. And I walk with him. What a beautiful picture of my walk with God. Face to face so that I might change and walk with him. And then I don't have to say, well, I was kind of close. I know I'm late or I'm way off. That's just my life, but not my heart. I want that with God's. So my prayer for you today is this. Habakkuk, where are you, God? And God says, I'm right here face to face. Let's line hearts up and then go change your politics. Go change your world. listen to whatever talk show you want to, go to your schools, pray for your teachers, and you come alongside of them. And like we do here, pray for every pastor in this community. They're not preaching the Bible. No, you didn't hear me. Pray for every pastor in this community. Pray for every church in this community. Pray for every soldier. Well, they're not all godly men. Pray for every soldier. Pray for the president, Barack Obama. Well, I'm not Democrat. You're not hearing me. And God says to pray for your leaders. See, that's God's heart because God loves him. And God wants his heart. And if God can't have his heart, I can pray for that man every day. Well, what kind of politics is that? It's not. It's Christianity. It's what I have. It's what God's given me to change the world. One life at a time. And so we go baptize 6, 7, 8 people. One life at a time. So join us. Change your world. Like Habakkuk. Where's the justice? Where's the mercy? That's what I desire. Let's stand and pray together.